man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hey, 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 how's it going? And welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Iffy Whitey Way, and in the booth with me are all my friends. And I'm going to introduce them to you a little something like this. I'm not going to rap it. Film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
You know, Iffy, I'm a little bit reluctant to mention this only because they sponsor other podcasts and not this one. And frankly, they should. But I'm going to just throw out a freebie anyway. I tried... native
if you
deodorant.
Say Squarespace,
no,
my God.
No, 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 no. Native deodorant. Tried the charcoal. I'm really enjoying it.
Ooh.
It's a subtle scent. I usually go straight up unscented on my, you know, armpit accessories, but I went for the charcoal and I'm really
so fresh and
it.
So clean.
Yeah. I am so fresh and so clean.
Is that a natural deodorant?
It is.
Or are you concerned about the aluminium?
I generally use I have to buy it at Whole Foods anyway, the kind that I have been using up until now, which is fine. Because there's so much crazy toxic stuff. I don't use an antiperspirant because that just clogs up your pores and does God knows what to you. It's just a deodorant. But anyway, so I thought I'd give it a shot because these guys were sponsoring, like I said, another show.
and it worked.
You give me a promo code and I'm like, okay, I'm in.
Podcast advertising works.
But yeah, so I dug it. So, you know, Native, maybe you should think about underwriting this show. I'm just saying. I'll talk more about it.
That's up. And also that other voice you heard tuning in, chatting,
inquisitive, bossy.
Producer and Films Festival programmer, Drea Clark. Drea, what is good?
Well, I'm also not going to rap mine, which is a real letdown. I would have if you guys did. Okay, what's up with me? You guys know my personality enough that you know that what I'm about to say is actually what I consider super sexy. And that is, this girl went and changed 60 different passwords in the last week. Ooh. What's up, digital protection?
Wow.
Did you get that email from Google?
Uh-huh.
Me too.
And I was like, oh. I don't know if I buy this, but I'm still going to do it. And I went through literally 61, and I had to go to each different website and update it, all with unique different passwords.
Well, I have unique passwords on all my important websites.
I know I'm just like taunting like fate and the world right now. So someone is going to start like tweeting as me right quick.
Yeah. old hackers are going to come after you.
Yeah. But the smugness, I can't, like, it just feels good, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Clean out your closets and change your passwords. Live your best life.
Those chuckles and all around charisma you hear flowing into the mic comes from associate editor at Vulture, Jordan Cruciola. What's good?
It happens to be that in my stocking for Christmas, my mom also gave me Native deodorant.
Ooh,
oh,
right.
Wow.
So I've been using that since the turn of the year. It's going well.
Your mom, your original sponsor?
My original sponsor.
And since you didn't buy it yourself, you're now not being bombarded with Native ads every time you get on Facebook.
Yeah.
But for my, I feel like I'm supposed to go with something that's non-entertainment related for the what's good, but I can't get away from today. The best thing that happened was finding out that Dan Levy is going to be in the gay Kristen Stewart rom-com.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Levy's going to further the gay rights of Happiest Season and co-star in that with Mackenzie Davis and Kristen Stewart. And also, Victor Garber is going to be in it as the, hilariously, one of the conservative parents of Mackenzie Davis's closeted character.
Perfect.
He's going to be one of like the disapproving straight parents.
I am spending 2020 living for the lesbian Christmas movie that Clea DuVall is directing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just be clear
like,
about that.
Yeah, that is an essential point. That is an essential truth between Promising Young Woman giving me my whole life this spring and then having a new Christmas classic on my hands with Happiest Season. I couldn't be happier about where 2020 is going for me.
Indeed.
Iffy, what's good?
Yeah.
I did a like comedy festival last year at some point, and they gave like this like perfume that was crystal infused. And you know, at first I just had it like, it's there. But
is
now,
that like the diamond water on Shaws of Sunset?
No. It was like it's probably the same, but it has like a like, you know, definitely like a patchouli adjacent type smell going to it, but it smells good. So I've been like wearing it on dates with white women, and I think that it's definitely making things better for
me. White women, your comedy troupe, or actual white women?
Actual white women. That's the new age who's on first. It's like a good smell, but like it's supposed to give me good vibes. So I don't know.
Oh.
I'll let y'all know.
White women are responding well to the vibes.
Tell me. I'm wearing it right now.
Oh, I sensed it. I did make a point of touching your shirt today.
All right. Well,
so maybe that's what it was. Although I never want to be described as patchouli adjacent myself, so I'm a little wary.
Well, today we're talking about Doolittle, a movie everyone's been anticipating, and we'll take a call from the Who Shot line, and we have staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment called Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer this question, Is It Important? Do I Care?
I'd love to start this off.
Oh, please do.
I do want to explain that Alonzo uses it a dick in sentences as, oh, we got to it a dick this one.
Yeah, like is the eat a dick adjacent intentional on this
All right. So as you guys all know, because we've discussed it, Disney purchased 20th Century Fox about a year ago. However, it was announced this last week that Disney would officially be dropping the Fox title from the production studio's names, which means 20th Century Fox will now be 20th Century Studios. Mm. It is 2020, but I'll let that go. Fox Searchlight will be rebranded Searchlight Studios. Is this important and do you care?
I don't know if it's important, but I don't know why I care so much. Like, when this was announced, like, I felt resentful. I felt sad that I watched a movie that night just by chance that was a 20th Century Fox movie.
Are you a Murdoch?
The Herald and, like, trumpets came in,
yes,
and I saw the logo, and I got really pissed off.
There's a real sense of history erasure going on here.
Yeah, it made me like, you own everything, Disney. Like, what? Why? What is the point of this?
Do you think? I'm assuming they have to keep the da 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 da.
Well, they better.
I'm gonna be so outraged if that's gone. Oh my! I'm gonna scream in the first movie theater I go to.
What if I pitch this? It starts. It goes da 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 da, and then it does a record scratch.
Oh, they've done that before.
Oh god!
Oh my god! Nightmare.
The little Pixar lamp jumps in and just hammers it into the ground.
I just like it is a facet of Hollywood history that they're just kind of paving over, and that I find that super annoying. I actually have now seen a film with the Searchlight Pictures thing in front of it. It's just like, you know, I'm gonna always feel that absence in these movies.
Me too.
I mean, yes, the Fox News brand obviously is toxic, and they didn't buy all of Fox. Like, they bought the library, but they don't own the news channel. They don't own the TV network.
Yeah.
So, you know, I see where they're coming from. But also, like, to keep the 20th century part.
That's honestly odder. Like, if I spent billions of dollars buying a property, I'd change the title. Like, I get that.
I mean,
I get the rebranding, and I get to, there are only a few monoliths in town.
I think you could say, taking the very, very long historical view on this, the 20th century is like when the cinema was born, for all intents and purposes, you know? So, yes, it will always be significant in the history of film.
And they're literally not making any movies on their own in the 21st century anymore,
exactly.
I guess.
But
most people are idiots and don't understand how century coding works. So, like, you could ask someone what century it is, and they'd be like, it's 2020. It's the 20th century.
That's accurate.
Oh, golly. Okay. So Bill Abbott, the CEO of the Hallmark Channel parent company Crown Media, is stepping down after 11 years. This comes off the heels of a controversy last month when Hallmark pulled a Zola commercial because it involved a same-sex couple. The network eventually apologized, but Zola said it would no longer advertise with the network. Also last month, One Tree Hill actress Hillary Burton said she was let go from one of the network's holiday movies after asking for more diversity on the project. No reason was given for his departure. Is this important? Do you care?
I care deeply because Alonzo cares.
Yeah. I care so much.
Yeah.
I actually kind of met Bill Abbott recently. He and I were both the Deck the Hallmark podcast. Dan has been on this show. They have a Patreon where they do, you know, exclusive episodes. And they had him on and me on to do our five favorite and five least favorite Christmas movies of the 2019 season.
Okay.
And I have to say, for the CEO of the Hallmark Channel to pick his five least favorite Christmas movies was kind of a baller move. I respect the chutzpah of that, even though like most of my favorites were among his least favorites. Amazing. And vice versa. Huh. But, you know, go figure. Here's what I hope the upside of this mm-hmm. is. You know, no shade on him personally, but he is the guy who sort of took, you know, when 1 million moms, which is like three people on a fax machine, claimed credit for taking the Zola commercial off of mm-hmm. Hallmark, they said, well, we talked to Bill Abbott and he took care of us and yada, da, da, da. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't until the larger Hallmark, like the card people, basically mm-hmm. said, no. We're inclusive. We've been reaching out to like LGBTQ people.
We've
the
been
cards.
Making cards for new communities now. You are not picking this up.
Exactly.
For us.
Yeah. So they were very much like undo. And so the fact that now Bill Abbott is leaving, you know, while I hope he lands on his feet, what I hope it means for the network is they're going to stop being so white and so heteronormative and so safe in their choices out of this perception of this audience that they think they're going to offend versus, like, I think a larger audience that would be more likely to embrace these movies if they reflected the world as it actually exists.
It will be interesting to see who they land on to replace him, because that will... to
speak
me
volumes,
be a great
yeah.
indicator of mm-hmm. are they making him a scapegoat and then kind of going to keep status quo but under the guise of, oh no, we made all these changes, or yeah. is this, like you said and like I think we all hope, the opening of a new era of what Hallmark's doing
yeah.
with their properties, because they make a lot of content at this point.
Oh, God, wow, yeah. They make like 100 new movies a year, I think, for the network.
Elizabeth Moss had their like, quote last year, where she's like, I'm obsessed with the Hallmark Channel. I have the Hallmark Channel app. I love the Hallmark Channel. It is a cult following
yeah.
in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a cultural phenomenon to be sure.
All right. Well, I guess it's time to talk about Robert Downey Jr. before we talk about Robert Downey Jr.
The pre-game Man of Robert Downey Jr. The shot before the chaser.
Yeah. This is when people do the thing that I hate, which is getting appetizers that's the same protein as the dinner.
I hate that.
Yes.
When people are meal planning and they're like, how about like a meat, like a beef bite, and then we have steak.
Yeah,
I'm like, how about you don't?
Oh my God,
how about
I'm
you
excited
don't double
to
down?
Develop an opinion about this.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
I was home at Christmas and my family tried to push two pasta dishes on dinner. Like, let's have lasagna and then we'll have the spaghetti. When I was like,
what?
Absolutely
what
not.
Are you doing?
We do not need two starches. What is this?
So back in 2008, Robert Downey Jr. was in the midst of relaunching his career. The original Iron Man came out that year. Mwah! And so did Tropic Thunder, which, you know, honestly, mwah! I'll give it like a half, because when we go back, ain't hitting the same. Where Downey played Kirk Lazarus, an Australian method actor who undergoes pigmentation alteration surgery to darken his skin in order to play a black character in a war movie. The role still draws criticism to this day, which I have notes on. not by black people is how I'll start that off. Downey was recently asked about it on the Joe Rogan Experience, and he had this to say about why he took the role.
Where is your heart? And my heart is, A, I get to be black for a summer in my mind. So there's something in it for me. The other thing is I get to hold up to nature the insane self-involved hypocrisy of artists and what they think they're allowed to do on occasion. Just my opinion. Tropic Thunder was about how wrong that is.
Yes.
So I take exception.
There's so much to unpack there.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, he didn't say anything.
Ask the question.
Is this important? Do we care?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I gotta go with yeah.
Oh. I care. And not just because you made me listen to a clip from the Joe Rogan show.
Look, that's my bro, you know?
Let's unpack this puzzle box.
Fellow buff comedian. fellow comedian, way too buff to be telling jokes into a mic. Except, you know, I skipped the sleep deprivation chamber thing. Who knows? Maybe that's me in 10 years.
Here's open.
I mean, the money, yes. The head size.
Here's the thing with Robert Downey Jr., and I think it's good groundwork for us to have all day.
Yeah.
The man conquered heroin. He does not give a shit about anything.
I love the way Robert Downey Jr. Talks about anything, because it has this sense of like gravitas and like philosophical engagement, because he's like, I should be absolutely dead and I'm not.
He's like,
let's expound on everything.
He's an accidental sorcerer because of his years of drug abuse and now his years of sobriety.
Yeah.
The combination of those have made him a stone cold weirdo.
And the amount of money he has raked in his invincible financially to just a comical degree. For somebody who doesn't do any directing or any sort of like alternate, like he's just a pure actor.
Yeah.
And yet.
Oh, he's a producer now. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Is it just me, or was that like not a massive self own?
Yeah.
That whole quote. It's like, wait, you. But I mean, you
you're
see where
that
also
doing.
Applies to you. Playing this role in the first place, right? Like, just because the role is commenting on a stupid thing that actors do doesn't mean that you're not doing a stupid thing actors do.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing, and here's the stance. There is not a single, I won't say a single, there are not many black people on this world, on this planet, who did not understand the role and, as an addendum, enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the criticism, quote unquote, comes from when people are trying to deflect when someone else is being called out for black. Face. I've yet to see a genuine take as to like, this is a bad thing. It's always been, if Trudeau's being called out and is like, well, we're letting Robert Downey Jr. do this, why is he? It's like, because Robert Downey Jr. is playing a role of someone being dumb. Like, everyone understands it. And I think
Kirk is not a sympathetic character in Tropic Thunder.
Here's the thing though. When this, I think maybe it was the 10th anniversary of this movie, we did a segment about it on a show I used to do on Young Turks called What the Flick.
Mm-hmm.
And I always operated under the assumption that this is a role that is making fun of a certain thing, and it is intended to be a mockery of blah blah blah, and so it knows what it's doing and da da da. And I did a segment with two black journalists who did not see it that way and were not amused by it. And so I don't know if you think that they're in the minority, and maybe they are, but they were very adamant about why this was inexcusable, no matter what the intent behind it was. And that made me have to sort of reframe it in my mind of like, okay, I've been giving him a pass all this time, but I got to defer.
I mean, as a, like, when you're not a black person, you can do that. But it's the same thing with slave movies, where you have people, black people who are like, there shouldn't be any slave movies ever. And it's like, well, no, there are some stories that can be told. You just feel a certain way. And I think, and I'm very like sensitive and get real worked up about this, because I think also like as a comedian, when I was coming into comedy, one of the big things was the idea of like, you know, like black men in dresses and like the emasculation of black men and what that means. And then I'll never be a fan of like absolutes of like not taking the time to understand nuance and just painting everything as this is this and this. And I oftentimes think a lot of people have commodified their wokeness to get clicks and stuff. So it's easier to be mad at things because that's going to be the thing that gets clicks. But also, I'm a comedian, so I understand that my barometer is usually a little lighter. Like, nothing's going to stick out. But I can, in my life, say that I've been wrongfully arrested, had guns pointed at me, had cops, dealt with racism, been to Louisiana, dealt the Deep South. So, like, all my credentials to say what I can and can't be offended by, I think I've experienced enough to see when lots of times a lot of hyper-educated people who look down on people like me growing up who want to pretend to be offended by things gets me really worked up. Like it's another layer, and I'll stop right there, because now I'm starting to really get into that mode where I'm tangentializing.
It's exciting. I wish everyone could see how much he's talking with his hands.
Oh, I'm a hand talker. We're gonna take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Dulo just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Nearly two decades ago, Commander Data sacrificed his life.
The Greatest Discovery is also about Star Trek Picard.
Jesse Thorne won't let us stay on the network unless we do all the Star Trek series, and so here we are, doing a show about maybe our favorite Star Trek character of all time.
If you're excited to watch the new Star Trek Picard series and you'd like some veteran Star Trek podcasters to watch it along with, we're your guys. Sorry you're stuck with us.
What the hell are you doing out here, Picard? saving the galaxy.
So subscribe to The Greatest Discovery. You can find it anywhere you find podcasts.
Or at MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Jordan Cruciola.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today, we're talking about Doolittle. Jordan, since you're our guest, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of the film?
Yes. As we know, Dr. Doolittle is the man who talks to animals, and we are introduced to him in this film as he has locked himself away in his grounds, which were gifted to him after helping the Queen of England. He's locked himself away after tragically losing his wife in a sea adventure mishap. And so a couple young folks come to his door, one asking for help to repair an injured squirrel, another asking him to surface and help the Queen of England, who is dying. And his incentive to actually get off his ass and do that is that if the Queen dies, he loses his lease on his house, basically, and he's going to get evicted. So he has to set out across the high seas and recover a rare medicinal option, a rare medicinal tree, the fruit of it, to help the Queen of England. And so we go on this adventure with them.
Ooh.
Do we think they realized that Doolittle was Shrek when they were making this?
In terms of the terrible Scottish accent?
That he just wanted to, be locked away on his land with nobody but him?
Yeah.
I don't think I realized that till you were describing it. I'm like, oh, he's Shrek.
No, I did think about Shrek, but literally only because, I couldn't figure out what the hell Robert Downey Jr.'s accent was supposed
he's
to be.
He's doing a sort of Welsh accent.
It's supposed
accent.
To be Welsh, but it's sort of Irish sometimes.
It made me wonder, hearing it made me call into question. I was like, have I ever heard a Welsh person speak?
Michael Sheen is Welsh, so I was double in pain in the scenes with him because I was like, he had to sit and listen to this butchering. Robert Downey Jr., Peter Dinklage, and myself all share a similar skill in horrible accentry.
Yeah, the Peter Dinklage accent is just the Peter Dinklage accent.
Yeah.
That's all that is. The Tyrion accent.
Oh, yeah. You just know if you wanted anything about Peter Dinklage's voice, is he's forever infamous for the video game Destiny, where he voiced the ghost robot that would follow you around. And it really did sound like he recorded it in between takes of Game of Thrones because it was very bored like this. But now, gamers are dumb. I don't think I need to remind anybody this, but if you put enough time between something gamers hated, and then everyone will look back and be like, we actually like that thing.
Don't so you
now,
dare change it.
Yeah, so now people are asking for the Dinklage
Wait,
voice
Wait, how
to come
does
back.
A robot become a ghost?
Don't. Wrong. Nope. We're gonna be adjacent to something. We're gonna go so deep.
Alonzo, I strike the question.
Alonzo, I want to know what you thought. They thought they were doing with this.
Well, it's funny. It's like Robert Downey Jr. is coming into this movie with all the chits in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has established himself as a bona fide movie opening movie star. You know, the toast of the Avengers. You know, franchise manages to get himself killed off and is like, now I get to do what I really want to do. And apparently it's this. So committed to it that he and his wife produced the movie. And I'm baffled.
Exec produced, which is a title that you're given when you attach.
No,
as
but
major
his wife
talent.
His produced
wife
it.
Was definitely
and there's
producer,
a Team Downey logo at the end
sure,
of the film.
Sure.
So I'm thinking was he just trying to think this is something that's going to be four quadrant, adults will want to come see it for me and kids will enjoy the adorable talking animals. And it's the kind of movie where, I'm sure the animals are all voiced by whatever country's celebrities are speaking in that language, you know? And so I'm sure on paper it had all these things that this is why this is just going to be, it's going to launch a new franchise. And it's just a disaster. You don't get to say disaster that often, and really mean it. But this movie is so ill-conceived from the get-go. I didn't find out until later that they massively reshot tons of it. They brought in the guy
two
who
new directors.
Yeah, two new directors. At first, the guy who directed the Lego Batman movie came in and kind of restructured it, but he had another gig. So then they brought in the new Ninja Turtles guy to actually shoot for another three or four weeks. And
part of it is, I agree. On paper, I think the other thing that worked about this property is Downey Jr. has had success in such random stuff at this point that it's like, oh, he's infallible. He's untouchable. And one of the things that this film, when I first heard about it, made me think of within Iron Man, when he has those great scenes that's just him interacting with the robots that obviously are not people. They're not even voiced on that. And they're some of the best and most fun moments in it. And I'm sure the offshoot of that, of like, we're going to take the energy and charisma of these and build a whole thing and give you this menagerie of voice actors to play with. So on paper, it makes sense. Where it really started to take a hard on paper, the writer-director of this, the initial writer-director, Stephen Gagan, is that how?
Gagan.
Who is best known for writing Steven Soderbergh's Traffic and
directing
Syriana. He's known for like dark political thrillers, and why he was untested with CGI, untested with family movies, honestly,
Do we have an enchanting movie for you to make?
The more y'all explain the hiccups along the way, the more I understand. Because
the more it
this was a movie.
Sense, really.
Because I was really trying to like figure this movie out. First off and foremost, just based on the things I saw, I didn't know it was going to be a kid's movie. And I, the more I watched it, I think the movie didn't know it was going to be a kid's movie. I think the choice to get that, you know, writer, director, it seems like they were trying to go for like a kind of like dark heroic adventure, maybe like my Pirates of the Caribbean-esque type deal. But everything makes so much sense because there's so many parts that don't feel like they're working towards the same goal in the movie. There are parts of the movie where the jokes seem very like kid-friendly. There are parts of the movie where the jokes seem mid-level, where it's funny for kids and that. There are part where the jokes are completely anachronous to the movie, referencing things that, you know, we aren't seeing. And it's funny enough, all those jokes work for me, but as a viewer, I'm like, it doesn't work for the movie.
like the funniest gag in this movie that is set during the era of Queen Victoria is a bunch of ants referencing the Godfather. Yeah. You know, and like, and Doolittle is totally, you know, this, you know, mutton chop sort of Victorian gentleman, but all the animals speak in like 21st century sassy internet meme.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, and again, like on paper, you could make this work, but it just
it had to land with a thud. I mean, obviously the cash grab of a project like this, but you know, the lineup of their voice talent, not to mention Antonio Banderas and Michael Sheen.
Yeah,
but
and Jim
like,
Broadbent.
Jim Broadbent. Like that, you get Olivia Spencer in there to be like, hi,
Octavia.
Octavia Spencer in there to say hi. I'm Dab Dab.
Yeah,
like I
the
have
duck with
to
the
believe,
wooden leg.
Right at some point, or she's the duck. Yeah.
Yeah, Marion Cotillard, Emma Thompson, Tom Holland.
I went and saw this yesterday afternoon, and I will say I did the responsible thing by buying a ticket to Parasite and then going into Doolittle instead. I know our Vulture, our review of this on Vulture by Bill Gobiri did very well, and I think the headline was like Doolittle is anti-cinema. And I feel like taking things sort of where they are. I didn't like this movie, but like it was just like, oh, it's a bad kids movie. Like I find it just so innocuous. Peter Travers once described, I think it was the second Charlie's Angels movie, like Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, in the way that this movie made me feel, which is it's like being beaten by a feather duster for 2.5 hours. Like, and at the time he said, like, it doesn't leave any scars, but you will feel the pain. And I wasn't bothered by this movie because at a certain point it was just like, oh, it felt like the way it was stitched together when they infiltrate the castle, they have to go get like this book to teach them, you know, like to find out how to get to this medicinal tree. They do a voiceover of the entire infiltrating the castle. It was like, oh, you had to reshoot all of this.
Yeah.
And then the way Emma Thompson's voiceover comes in, it's like, oh, this is paper hampering over things you couldn't complete. And at a certain point, it just feels like, oh, fuck, I think I know. You just had to get the movie out.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you thought you were going to do, at a certain point, you realized that that was impossible or it was wrong. And you just had to Frankenstein this thing together into something deliverable because you couldn't back out on it. So it just felt like a project that had to be finished because they were contractually obliged
to
do
it. It was a summer release that then suddenly made its way to January.
Oh, yeah. Right. And so I'm watching, it was like, oh, this is like just a really expensive project, like your term project in biology that you smash together with like popsicle sticks and glue that like, oh, well, hopefully we'll get a better grade on the final because the midterm sucks.
But I think there are movies though, like Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, which
I love Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. I will defend it with my life.
A movie I think I described as an ice cream headache. You know, it's like
I mean, no, that was an ice cream high. That was a sugar rush. Like Demi Moore, you're an icon.
You like what it's giving you, but at some point you're like, oh my God, stop. I beg you, stop. This movie, I didn't like any of it. You know, like
I was indifferent to the entire experience.
It opens as a 2D animated film narrated by Emma Thompson. And after, I was like, could we go back to that? Could we just be
that
the 2D
nice.
Animated film?
That seems nice.
Narrated by Emma Thompson. That would be lovely. You know, I think like there are, you know, we're still on a high from Cats, you know?
Bless
like,
it. Bless
that's
Cats.
That's a movie that is just like so completely invested in its own insanity that at least it commits all the way. You're right. Yes. This is like the, you take Cats and then you run it through test screenings and reshoots studio notes, you know?
And then you would just end up with like a movie with really weird proportion things and people wearing just like rags.
Yeah.
Like it would be like if Cats suddenly removed all the CGI, it was like, well, we won't paper over any of that. We'll just let people...
Just leave it there.
Yeah, we'll just let people figure it out.
It is strange to me, the idea to set this in sort of the mid-1800s to make it in the realm, you know, in Queen Victoria's realm, and that she's a character in it. It was an odd choice, and I wondered if it was because they thought it would make the use of the animals more magical. But then I wanted more from the magicalness. Like the 1967 Rex Harrison version.
Oh, good. I was waiting to talk about that.
Terrible and amazing.
Yes.
And there's a few standout things. It's a musical, but all the music is horrible.
Is that the one where he throws the seal?
Yes, it is.
He makes out with the seal.
He makes out with the seal that's dressed in a bonnet and a cape.
Yes.
Not only throws the seal over a cliff, but then is arrested for the murder of the woman. Please watch even just that scene. But the difference, Rex Harrison, one of the things that stood out, that's from however many decades ago now, and it was with real animals. And there's something about...
peed on by sheep.
Yes, like, there's the awkwardness of him having to interact with real animals, but there's something great and tactile about that. And with this, with as much as there's been advancements in technology, and sure, this allows us to think he's riding an ostrich with Kumail Nanjiani's voice, then it's also... we're so used to seeing those that there's a lack of magic to it.
Yeah. Robert Abele was on Linoleum Knife, and he talked about how like CG has become the warm bath of everything.
Yeah.
Like it just it doesn't take you anywhere exciting. It just is sort of there to kind of fill in the gaps.
It's why one of the great shows of 2019 was The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Give me a season
practical
2.
Practical puppets. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
The other part of this that I would get into, other than all of the mishandling and the Frankensteining, this is the perfect idea of something that should have been a simple concept. It's based on a children's book.
Right. It's been like, successful
it's
before
property,
multiple times.
Well, the 67
Rex Harrison
was
a dud. The Eddie Murphy ones were hit.
Right, right.
The funny enough, the Rex Harrison was a dud that still got like Oscar.
A Best Picture nomination. Mark Harris's Pictures in a Revolution. It's fascinating. Yeah. Apparently Fox had like a month where they would screen the film for Academy members, followed by a dinner with prime rib and champagne.
Yeah, that sounds
that
about
might
right.
Have helped.
I mean,
Hollywood.
Vote sounds secured.
But I think about how, like, if I was a studio head and I had these things and, you know, you're filtering all of them, what do you think there's any one thing they could have adjusted to this formula other than the lack of a strong directorial voice? Do you set it contemporary? Do you make it a musical?
They adjusted everything, right? So who knows? I mean,
it seems like they turned every dial instead of just deciding which dial to turn.
A thing that I thought was strange is like, it's a kid's movie and the lead character is a depressed widower.
Yeah.
Like, he is in a solid funk for like a chunk of this movie.
Like, don't they know that all kids want to see are movies about orphans? Yeah. Who aren't depressed for some reason. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was very like it truly did feel like there were multiple movies trying to exist in one where I think we could have gotten a nice landing if we would have went with one. Because I do like this idea of like these Doolittle and Company adventures, and maybe like his wife sends him a letter where she's like, I'm not actually dead, because that'd be a weird plot point. So why don't you come find me?
I fully thought he was going to find her on the island. Uh-huh. I was like, well, we've done everything else.
She was going to be inside the dragon's ass behind the bagpipes.
Can we talk about that for a second?
I gotta say, in defense of the dragon's ass, there's actually precedent, because there's a whole thing in the first one where he has to help an animal, is it
with
poop?
A colon blockage?
Oh yeah, he like sticks his arm up a dog. Oh no, actually that's the Eddie Murphy version.
Yeah, okay. He does like, the fingers
he,
in.
Like, has to like relieve a dog's bowels. These movies love what
butts
people
that,
have
and apparently,
in their
apparently
butts.
That was one of the later add-ons, the whole dragon colonoscopy.
But yeah, that I laughed. But anyway, there was only two other people in the theater with me, because when I was buying my ticket, like the guy selling me was like, yeah, you can sit anywhere you want. There's only like two other people in there. And I was like, oh yeah, no one's busting at the seams to see Doolittle. And he did not laugh. So, all right, cool. Okay. But like I'm leaving and
man's
those
livelihood iffy.
these two Zoomers literally stood at the door to wait to see my face because they wanted to know who was the dork laughing at the stew. I was like, don't judge me when you're behind me giving each other's HJs and what have you. I know what you were doing. I was young once. Don't you dare. Casey is saying it's time to wrap it up.
If you're Drea going to a movie to give and ago. Or get an HJ, I think Doolittle is
the... Doolittle, teens, all the Zoomers listening, the HJ movie of the month.
Oh, wow.
You are looking for an almost empty dark room.
Not since
you
Roberto Benigni's Pinocchio.
Hot tip.
Rated HJ.
Oh, my.
Speaking of ratings, it's time to say what we think of this movie. The way we do our reviews on Who Shot You is, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it? Why don't we start with our guest, Jordan? What would you do?
I'm going to skip this one. Not with a vengeance, just like, oh no. I'll put on Cats for my universal animal catastrophe. Thank you.
Ooh, Drea, thoughts?
Yeah. This is not, it's not fun enough.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if it's free and your kids really like it and can play on the background, sure. Children like all sorts of terrible things. But no, it's not even fun for being a horrible film. Mm. It's just disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
skip to my loo. It's a fiasco and not a fun fiasco. Yeah, like granted, when I was 6 years old, I liked watching those terribly dubbed Pippi Longstocking movies. You know, so like, who am I to judge? But
those were great.
You find something better to entertain your children, and this will not entertain you, an adult.
Yeah, yeah, I think I'm a rock with the crew on this one and say skip unless. There's two reasons to, I'm going to say stream. You don't have to screen. Unless you're 14, you don't have anywhere to go. Like I said, that's
you got a bottle of Jergens.
Oh, these kids don't lubricate. But, you know, stream it if you have like some youngins over and you're like, I'll put something on for you to just sit and watch something. Like I'd say anywhere between the ages of 6 to about like maybe 11, they'll sit in front and watch it, to all my babysitters listening. But let's take a break. We'll be right back after we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Renee Colbert.
I'm Alexis Preston.
And we're the hosts of the smash hit podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? Now, Alexis.
Yes.
We got big news.
Uh-oh.
Since last we did a promo, our dogs have become famous.
World famous.
World, like...
stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Second big news.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews are in.
Mm-hmm.
Take yourself to Apple Podcasts. You know what you're going to hear? We're happy.
It's true.
We're a delight, a great distraction from the world.
I like that part a lot.
So if that's what you guys are looking for, you got to check out our show. But what else can they expect?
We've got dog tech, dog news, celebrities with their dogs, all dog things.
All the dog things. So if that interests you, well, get yourself on over to Maximum Fun every Tuesday.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Sophie Wadiway, and in the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Jordan Cruciola.
Drea Clark.
Now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play that call!
Hey guys, so in honor of your discussion of Doolittle, what are your favorite movies that flopped, and what are your least favorite? Some of my favorite flop movies are the 2017 Power Rangers, or Valerian. I'll even add Terminator Dark Fate. But some of my least favorite are Ishtar or 47 Ronin with Keanu Reeves. What are your best and worst flops?
I feel like he was auditioning for the podcast with that voice.
I am not here for this Ishtar calumny.
did you just say calumny?
I did.
Did Power Rangers note that flop? Home.
I don't think so.
It did actually okay for them.
I think it did okay.
It wasn't an astounding success.
It didn't do well critically. Yeah. I think it did fine box office.
I don't think anybody was like mad about that one when it...
I would say my number one... I like that one. I'm glad that he said Terminator Dark Fate because I enjoyed that a lot and really wished it had done better box office. But a film that I feel like we've discussed before and I'm pretty sure we agree on, and if we don't, I'm willing to fight about it, that I loved and was poo-pooed on and did not do well... The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I have it written down right here.
Love it.
Me and right? you. Where's my sequel? Give it to me now.
Best Armie
Hammer. Armie Hammer and Henry
Best
Cavill are viable
forever.
To do this.
And Alicia Vikander.
And bring back Elizabeth Debicki as
100%.
One of the great villains
she
of the past
10 years.
She somehow
survives being blown up in a boat. I
exactly.
don't care.
Or just give me like lots of magazine layouts of them wearing 60s outfits.
Absolutely.
And discussing. There is a scene
and
in that
disgusting.
Motion picture where those two men... are discussing what accessories go with this woman's outfit, and I have never been more aroused in a film.
I love that movie. I have seen The Gentlemen, and it's fun. It's nonsense, but it's very entertaining. But all the while, I'm just thinking, I just want another man from U.N.C.L.E.
I just want another man from U.N.C.L.E. The stands from U.N.C.L.E. are out there. We are loud. Totally. We are ready.
I feel good about this team.
If we're talking about 2019, the two movies that I was heartbroken, of the big expensive movies that didn't find an audience, I love Charlie's Angels. I thought it was a blast.
I love that you love
Same.
It.
And Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Mm. I had so much fun. I was screaming in the theater.
Yes.
I was having the best time.
That was, of all of the like neo-kaiju Hollywood versions of this, this was the one that pressed my like Toho buttons.
It was the magic of cinema.
Yes.
And that shot of King Ghidorah lording over his monsters from on top of the volcano, I wanted to stand and just throw my arms in the air. I was so happy.
I've not seen that yet and you've just won me over.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's just like monster, monster, monster. It's like, you know what we did with the last one where the Mutos are like the monsters in negative space and you only see them for like 8 minutes? Screw that. We're going to give you all the monsters every time.
Yeah, it was like Destroy All Monsters where it's just like this all-star cast of like building crushing lizards.
And you know who your monster heroes are, so you're rooting for your monsters the entire time instead of like, are we really on the side of the monsters or not? No. These are your monster heroes. These are your monster villains. Let them fight.
She
I love
it.
Iffy, do you have a flop that's close to your heart?
It's very on brand.
Can't wait. There's two examples I have in my head. If you don't say one of them, I'm going to die.
Okay. Ooh, I'm
I
so
hope
curious.
I don't die.
Warcraft is definitely one of them.
Really?
Yeah, Warcraft, because if you actually play the game...
As somebody who played the game, you felt like it honored...
Yeah,
As a fan of the game.
I was able to fill the holes that they left out in the story.
Okay.
So I was able to rock with the story and got to see this beautiful tale come to life and really help you understand that, you know, the Horde, they aren't bad guys. They were just led astray. But the Alliance, they are the heroes.
I just wish people could see Alonzo is turning inside out. I've never seen a person do that.
I hated that movie so fucking much. And every little... bitch on the internet who came after me about it started a sentence with, "Will you play the game?"
The PTSD
triggers.
You know
what? I shouldn't have had to read the book and I shouldn't have had to play the fucking video game for the movie to make sense.
You know, I'm just glad Hollywood finally made something for us, the gamers.
So the second part of this question.
Please let me stand specifically for Terminator Dark Fate.
Because
I recognize that 1 and 2 are the best of the Terminators. I won't really wave a flag for 3. I'm not an apologist for that and the other ones, whatever. But like, this is my Terminator movie.
Yeah.
I walked out of that. I was like, this is my Terminator for life.
Oh, yeah.
The like butch amorous gaze
yes.
of that
oh,
movie
yes.
is shocking. Mm-hmm. The incredible performance of Mackenzie Davis as an enhanced super soldier from the future. Give me that entire prequel franchise based on her character in the apocalyptic wasteland of the future. The sexual height differences between every one of the women in that movie. Yes. It made me feel happy and thrilled and challenged. And I loved it.
Yeah, I would watch a movie that is just 90 minutes of the training montage
of
her.
Of just seeing,
getting
like,
buff.
And the topping competition in the motel room when Linda Hamilton is like, sometimes mommy and daddy fight. I was like, the two women with lesbian haircuts just called themselves mommy and daddy.
Yeah. Oh.
And
yeah.
I also have to just send out a loving message to Gemini Man, which was such a quaint and charming time at the action of action cinema.
Did you watch it in the high frame
with all rates? all the bells and whistles? I didn't need them, but like it happened. Okay,
they made everything look like B-roll.
I love Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I will follow her into a burning building, and it was like a charming tale of family drama set amongst a rip-roaring Will Smith action film. And I walked out and I was just like, what a nice time I just had.
Will Smith
a sweet film.
Will Smith has now made three movies about how he's aging, but he can only be supplanted by his own DNA. That's a theme now.
I can't give you a replacement for Will Smith, so yes.
But before we move on to ones we hate, I want to just throw out two old ones, and I'll be quick.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Bogdanovich's 1975 flop musical At Long Last Love, I think, has aged well. And let us never forget, It's a Wonderful Life tanked Frank Capra's production company because it was such a money loser.
Oh, but no, I was going to say one more that I love, Super Mario Brothers.
Oh,
yes.
It's
so... The definitive video game adaptation of all time.
It is the one bad video game movie that gamers fuck with.
It is like the Dune of video game movies.
Yeah.
Like it is performance art.
The decision to see the cute Yoshis and the cute Goombas and be like, let's make them gross dinosaurs. What would that look? What if we like made the creation of these just really gross and moist?
I went opening day at the LCAP.
I just want to remind you that we all agreed on a couple of these because a few of Iffy's have been divisive since then. And I want you to all still remember how much we love each other. Okay, quickly, what are just naming a few of the flops that you are like, yes, deserve.
Battlefield Earth.
Yes, deserved.
Good one,
to lose.
Absolutely had it coming.
The Lone Ranger.
Ooh. That absolutely on my list.
Yes.
Like, I loved Army, obviously, love Army Hammer. Mm-hmm. No. No,
no, thank
Johnny
you.
Depp.
Johnny Depp has Tonto for 2.5
hours.
No, Gore Verbinski.
What did you do?
Yeah. Every Resident Evil after the first one.
Okay.
Ooh, boy.
I like the one in Vegas.
Which
the one with Ali Larder when she shows up.
Oh, okay.
But are they flops?
Actually, that's a good question.
Those did well.
I feel like they all kind of perform to their standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well.
Yeah, I would also say, I'm going to say this, Speed Racer, you guys.
Oh,
I'm with you.
No.
I didn't expect to come around on it, and
you did.
But I hear you. I respect it.
I guess I wanted so much more. That's a property that I dug.
Fair.
Filmmakers that I dug. Mm. Like,
yep.
My expectations of that film were really big. So, you know, it hurts more when it means something.
No, absolutely. I've been fighting people on this for years who defend it. Like, no. That movie does not work.
Team Speed Racer, ninjas, more like ninjas. Let's go.
I've got to say, it's Pan. Like I had Lone Ranger, but
God, the worst.
Garrett Hedlund as Hook, Hugh Jackman as Blackbeard, and Rooney Mara as Tiger Lily.
Oh God, that movie is so noxious on so many levels.
On so many levels, yeah. I've got to celebrate the burning death of Pan.
Yes, enjoy it. Enjoy warming your hands over that fire.
Yes.
Well, there you have it. We were together on some, against each other on most. Now we're together on most. I feel like y'all will come around. I think in a few years on Speed Racer and Warcraft. I believe it in my soul. But thanks to everyone who called in. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. That's WSY-803-1664. And now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie, in theaters, streaming, what have you. Jordan, why don't you start us off?
I am going to go with a little film that I really loved. It was so delighted by last year, Riot Girls.
Oh, fun.
By director Jovanka Vukovic. Mm. It is queer. It is like a delightful, like pseudo, it feels like a YA comic book adaptation, but it's not. It's an original story about rival factions in a post-apocalyptic landscape where all the parents have disappeared. And basically, society of children is divided into sides of factions on one side of the river and the other. The rich kids versus the poor kids, and it has Monroe Chambers with an absolutely wonderful villain turn as the dick-headed rich kid in a Letterman's jacket, and just like queer love and friendship at the heart of it. And I just was amused from beginning to end. It's also surprisingly violent, like definitely R-rated, like, oh shit, people's heads are blowing up. So it gets real.
It's like Riverdale with zombies and lesbians. I love that.
Yes. Ooh. Yes. Ooh. Yes.
My pick, obviously anyone who is familiar with the film cycle knows January is pretty much a dead zone for good releases. Thus, we talked about Doolittle tonight. So I thought, you know what? Let's look. What's on Netflix right now? What would I watch to make me feel good? It's a little, it's even a little cold in LA. What am I? And you know what's going to warm my heart every effing time? Mm. The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Freaking
yes.
Rennie Harlan.
It's off Netflix. It left January 1.
No.
It did. No, I was heartbroken.
You know what?
Because I was watching
it
at home in December.
Renting or buying it.
Find a Blu-ray.
If you have not watched it for a minute, or God, if you've never watched it, please, if you were wondering what a smoking hot Gina Davis looked like as an amnesiac housewife with a previous life as an assassin, this is the movie that's going to answer that question. And she and Samuel L. Jackson have the best rapport, and they go on a road trip. And to me, it was like prescient of the scenes in Captain Marvel when he and
yes.
Brie are turning or driving around. I love that. It's just good. It just stands up.
What else is it, Drea?
What else is it?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to fail this quiz.
It's a Christmas movie.
Oh, my God. It's a Christmas movie. I did that. I set that up. You guys, so I've picked something from Alonzo's category, mostly to just win his favor.
So this week, we lost the great Terry Jones from Monty Python, who was brilliantly funny and also like an expert in medieval history. And I had the very fortunate chance to meet him in Dallas many years ago at the USA Film Festival when we paid tribute to his career. And he couldn't have been nicer. And I wanted to recommend, he did a lovely adaptation of The Wind in the Willows in 1996 that Disney eventually released on video as Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And unless you want to go buy the DVD, it's not really streaming anywhere. Except for like DirecTV. So if you have that, you know, more power to you. But so I thought instead I would recommend another movie of his that I adore, which is Monty Python's Meaning of Life. Mm. A movie that apparently they all made because they got, that's the movie they got to retire on. Like they didn't get paid anything for Holy Grail and not much more for Life of Brian, but Meaning of Life was where they got to back the Brinks truck up. But it is a brilliant movie. It is a great anthology film. The sketches are genius.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think he does not get his due as a comedic filmmaker. We don't necessarily think of the directing of a Python movie or, you know, we think of, you know, Terry Gilliam obviously broke out on his own, but Terry Jones, also a really talented director and performer and writer and all of that stuff. So remember the great Terry Jones. Check out Monty Python's Meaning of Life. It's on Hulu and various other places.
Ooh.
John Cleese had that tragic tweet, like recognizing the death of Terry Jones, where he like said a little remembrance at the bottom that he said, two down, four to go.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, Cleese.
I shed a tear.
Well, you know, I have some writing deadlines coming up, so you know I've been catching up on movies I missed last year. So one of those movies that I sat through and actually really enjoyed, he's becoming actually one of my favorite horror guys in a genre I do not like, which is Midsommar by Ari Aster. I actually even saw What's Up with the
Johnsons.
Johnsons.
That was your
Johnsons. Johnsons.
Yeah, and that I really liked. And to bring it full circle to a thing that y'all might not have heard listening to this podcast, but please check it out. It's very, and for all my scaredy cats like me, there's nothing jump out that's scary. It's just like very scary images that stick with you, and the pacing is, I really enjoy it.
And collective dread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. It's like that was a weird. It was like pleasure and pain that I just did.
That's right the there. Ari Aster special right yeah. there. Yeah, that and grief.
Oh man. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Sorry. I can't go on any further. We briefly talked about Florence getting the Oscar nom really for this under the guise of this. Her display of grief was so beautiful. You know, like it truly, like, you know, I've like I volunteer for this camp that, like, you know, helps you deal with like grief and grieving children who've lost a loved one, and just like it, like it just felt so genuine.
You're gonna start screaming in their faces now when they're upset.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's
she's a tiny titan. Oh, that yeah. Florence Pugh. Yeah.
Before we go, let's read a 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air. And this one's from your friend Jamie. I've never thought of myself as a movie buff, but I gave Who Shot You a shot. Tongue face because they made a little play on words. Because I'm a Max Fun stan, and now it's one of the casts I look forward to most each week. Yeah. These folks have helped me recognize how much I really do love the cinema. And they provide the easiest way to keep up with the new flicks and decide what I want to spend my time on. Thank you so much for the great show, gang.
Well, thank you, Jamie. Thank you.
Nice
Jamie.
Things to say.
Jordan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank
Where
you so much for
you?
Having me.
Yeah, of course.
This has been a wonderful treat. You can find me on Twitter at JorCru, JorCru.
Okay.
Smart. To the point.
For all y'all's brains, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY 803-1664. We've gotten some really good messages this past week, but please keep them coming so we don't run out. And just a reminder that you can buy a Jumbotron on our show by going to www.MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPod. Or send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.